it takes me to a place where I think, oh yeah, God can lead you through the fire. And God is so good, and God really wants to love you. And the recognition that is just overwhelming, the goodness and the grace of God.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Today I talked to a guest who has a great story of faith, but he's also working to help young people develop their faith stories. It's a conversation about vocation, spirit, the goodness of God, soul, and a little bit of sports. Dr. Greg Jones is the president of Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, an ecumenical Christian university. He's also the host of the podcast, The Hope People. He currently serves on the boards of the John Templeton Foundation, the McDonald Agape Foundation, and the India Collective. Dr. Jones is married to the Reverend Susan Pendleton Jones.
We have an extraordinary mix of students. Among our Christian students, I say we have everything from Black and Hispanic Pentecostals through mainline Protestants to Roman Catholics and Eastern Orthodox. We actually have a pretty significant group of Coptic Orthodox coming from the Egyptian community here in Nashville. We also have Jewish students and Muslim students and agnostics. So it's a wide variety. What happened at Belmont was when we separated from the Baptist community, the Tennessee Baptist Convention, about two decades ago, rather than just drifting away to a kind of generic American university, we doubled down on an ecumenical Christian identity, which also welcomes other faiths and people of no faith. So it makes it a rich mix, sometimes a little bewildering, but what I say is the stronger you are in the center, the more welcoming you can be at the edges. And we want to show everyone that sense of hospitality. And I want everybody who comes here to feel like they are an integral part of Belmont, not just a student at Belmont.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you've said words that I could not imagine 20 years ago, an influx of Coptic Christians from the Egyptian community here in Nashville.
It's amazing that we've interviewed students for some of our highest awards, and they list on their resume that they're a Sunday school teacher in their Coptic Orthodox church. I thought I knew a lot about religion, but I don't actually know what goes on in a Sunday school class in a Coptic Orthodox church.
There is no denying that you are there in Nashville, Music City, USA, and you've got a pretty impressive music program, both for the music business, and I'm just wondering, you have this Christian focus, but also the music business. How did those pair together?
We sit right next to Music Row. My office literally looks out on the beginning of Music Row. And so we launched the music business program when people from Music Row came to one of my predecessors and said, hey, those of us who run Music Row are musicians. We don't know anything about business because you design a program. And so we did, and it's been a real great partnership. And that orientation toward practice, I like to say our songwriting faculty don't all have PhDs, they do have Grammys. And on the whole, I'd rather them have the Grammy than the PhD. Really, across all our vocations, especially in music and entertainment, but also in nursing and medicine, that we are preparing people, we hope, with deep faith in ways that they could practice in specifically religious institutions or in mainstream ones, so that we have people who graduate from Belmont and are connected to Belmont, Cece Winans and her son, who both win Grammys and Dove Awards and all sorts of things in gospel music. And we also have people like Brad Paisley and Trisha Yearwood and Tyler Hubbard, who are mainstream musicians. Their music comes out of their faith, but it's faith animated rather than faith specific. And we want to prepare people who are able to navigate that mainstream world, just as we want nurses and physicians to be able to practice at HCA healthcare, as well as perhaps a specific Christian institution.
I'm interested in that search for excellence in each area. What would you say to someone who said, you really have to choose? Are you going to come down on the faith or are you going to come down on high academic values?
I think that's a false alternative. You can seek excellence with humility and you can do it in a faith-inspired way. It ought to anchor us, but there's no substitute for excellence all the way around. Our chief creative officer, Rick Reckedahl, worked for 20 years at DreamWorks. He's a deeply faithful Christian, and he was making movies that lots of people wanted to watch. And so we want to do things with excellence that draw people to entertainment and good quality work. And it's a false alternative to think that you have to choose between academic excellence and faithfulness.
Yeah. I want to come back to your podcast in just a moment. First, though, can we go back to you and your beginnings? Did you grow up in a home of faith? And when did you actually connect with God in some way?
I grew up in a home of faith. My father was a pastor. My grandfather was a pastor. It actually goes back 5 generations. My older brother is a pastor. When people say, how'd you know to go into the ministry? I thought, it's the family business. I didn't know I had a choice. But when you said, how did you come to own it as yourself? I was a high school athlete and then fell on hard times with knee injuries and had to have a bunch of knee surgeries. And that process of having surgeries and no longer being able to see my identity through sports led to a pretty existential crisis. And I also had some allergic reactions to pain medicines. But one night I was in the hospital with an allergic reaction to pain medicine after a surgery. And I remember just not being sure I wanted to wake up in the morning. And I was really struggling with my identity because most of my friends were fellow athletes. And I did go to youth group at church, but I didn't really feel like that was part of my life. And in that pretty dark night for me, where I was a teenager still struggling with identity, I finally just said, okay, God, I get it. You want to love me for who I am, not for what I do. And that really was a pretty marked turning point in my life when I said, this is going to be who I am. And I began to lean into my faith and ultimately sensed a calling to ministry.
That's such an interesting idea of identity, that age you're talking about. I mean, I think most of us have been there, and those waters get stirred up and can be pretty murky sometimes. So you have students really that same age as you were within a year or two showing up at Belmont. Some of them probably arrive pretty rock solid, and then others are probably still searching. And so what do you do? How do you make a difference for them?
My wife and I team teach a course called What's Your Why? And part of that is to really help students think about their sense of purpose, their North Star, as we put it. And we interview people who've been very accomplished, and we ask them about their journeys of triumph and tragedy, of searching, of doubt, of faith, and how they've understood that. And we really try to help people recognize that this is a journey, and it's okay wherever you are on that journey. We do have students who are really strongly committed to their faith and know very clearly what their vocation is. And we also have people who are searching. We want to be a place that keeps that space open for people. We've had a lot of students who find their faith on mission trips during the fall. Our student athletes have mission trips, and it's really heartening to see when people discover that sense of faith and calling. But it is a journey. And as one of our guests on the What's Your Why class said, you can never be late on the timeline of your own journey.
Was an outgrowth of talking to those people, or maybe was a completely other impetus for the podcast that you do, the Hope People podcast?
It was connected to it, but it was also what gave rise to it was when I was at a reception downtown Nashville, and somebody made a beeline over to me and said, are you the president of Belmont? Y'all are the Hope People. And I thought, oh, I'll take that. And so we began conversations about what does it mean to be called Hope People? And I thought, we have people in our own community. We have visitors who come to visit us, and we have an emphasis on letting hope abound. And so we thought, why don't I interview people? We thought about writing a book just about hope or something. And I thought, but we could have something that lives on. And we can interview people who are both our alums and central to our community and others who are friends, but who inspire a sense of hope. When you get to talk to those sorts of people, it just lifts us up. And the world we're living in these days and the kind of turmoil in higher education and American culture in the world, it's easy to be on our heels and in a kind of reactive posture. But if you're on your heels, you're not able to move very well, and it's often easy to fall down. On the other hand, if we're on our tiptoes, then we can be nimble and agile and do all sorts of things. And what I find is that image of hope people are about people who are on their tiptoes. They've got that kind of spirit that just makes you want to lean in and look forward to the future.
It sounds like you've hung on to a bit of your sports imagery and maybe a few halftime talks.
That's right. At some point.
You've had some terrific guests, people like Maggie Barankitse from Burundi, Cody Fry, musician, baseball pitcher, R.A. Dickey. When you ask them about hope, are you asking them specifically about their faith, or does that just naturally come out when you ask about hope?
It does tend to come out. It's interesting because I also ask them about suffering. And each of the people you described had been through some difficult times. And yet there's an incredible joy and hopefulness. And so it comes out naturally as they tell their stories. And what I find inspiring is how honest they're willing to be. The stories are highly distinctive, and yet there's a sense of resilience and a sense of faith and a sense of joy that shines through as they talk about hope. And that's what really is pretty amazing and compelling. And I often feel at the end that I barely scratched the surface of those people standing on tiptoe.
This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with Greg Jones, president of Belmont University, right on Nashville's Music Row. In Good Faith brings you conversations with musicians and their music. Check out praise music from The King Will Come in episode 203, or one of our Christmas music specials like episode 175 with Molly in the Mineshaft, Sherry Call, and Paul Jacobson. Don't miss our upcoming Christmas music celebration with BYU's a cappella powerhouses, Vocal Point and Noteworthy. Find all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, and share an episode that's meant something to you with the people in your life. Now more from Greg Jones. Because we discovered we were born the same year, which we don't have to share, but it was before the turn of the century, let's say that. And I only mean one century. What have you learned about God that you didn't know when you were a young man, even though you were committing your life?
Just how gracious and good God is. That I've always been an achiever and a striver. And so I probably always thought somewhere that I had to prove myself and earn God's love, and was always looking around the corner thinking if I didn't give my best, God was gonna zap me. As I've gotten older, I've just discovered that God's grace and God's love is just overwhelming. When I need to recenter myself after a bad meeting or some bad news hits, I listen to C.C. Winans singing The Goodness of God.
Oh my gosh.
It just centers me. She sang it at my inauguration. Nobody remembers a word I said in my inaugural speech, because all anybody remembers is when the president sat down, C.C. Winans came out, and some friends jokingly said that night that they should fire me for incompetence as a leader. And I said, why? And they said, because you didn't take up a collection when C.C. was done singing. And I thought, that's actually right. I should have. But, you know, when she sings that, it takes me to a place where I think, oh, yeah, God can lead you through the fire. And God is so good, and God really wants to love you. And the recognition of that is just overwhelming, the goodness and the grace of God.
That song, I mean, my wife's our congregation's choir director, and she made me play for the choir just because I'm willing to romp on the keys with low octaves and stuff like that, because she said, we've got to build this. And singing that, and that with every breath that I am able, I will sing of the goodness of God.
Yeah.
I think maybe our church leader who got up right after it felt something like you felt, like, we've had the moment.
Yeah.
What now? Why am I here? And it was beautiful to hear him say, that was truth.
Yeah.
That we heard.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned having some drive and some energy and wanting to be an achiever. And that is a gift, depending where you point it. That can be what you're hunting. That's a gift. So every university has challenges. It's a big task to give a good quality education, but you've added this whole other layer that religiously affiliated universities do. We already have a full-time job. Let's add this other thing on. What gives you that energy, or does it all just feel like it's one mission to you?
Well, it does feel like it's one mission, and I think we're going through really turbulent times in higher education and education more generally in American culture and the world. And I think it's, again, if you're looking to the future and saying, how can we help people flourish? Then you're both going to be focused on what you need to do today with our current students. And you're going to be asking questions with, how can we be sure that we're preparing them for 2035 and 2045? Mm. Too much of higher education is preparing for 1995 in case it comes back again. Bad news, it isn't coming back.
And it wasn't always that great when we were there.
That's exactly right. And so it's really this sense of leaning in. And that's why I use that metaphor of being on tiptoes and looking to the future with a sense of hope and joy. We want to dream God-sized dreams, and we have to execute on those dreams. And that means we have to be as intentional in what we're doing today and tomorrow as we are in thinking about what we're going to be about 10 years from now.
Boy, how would you define a God-sized dream? Is that something that's out of your reach but not out of possibility with God's help?
And Maggie Baron-Keats, in my podcast with her, she said, with God, the impossible becomes possible. And so I say, when you dream God-sized dreams, you lead by nausea, because it's kind of like the story of Gideon in the Old Testament, where, you know, God says, oh, if you do this now, you're going to take credit for it. So I got to make it more challenging. And so the God-sized dream is where you're going, there's no way we can do this.
And you've got too many men. Get rid of some of them.
That's right. And it's only when Gideon's finally like, this is absurd, that God says, okay, now we're ready. And so, you know, a God-sized dream is one that seems impossible. And yet, if you keep focused on God and you focus on the execution day to day, it's stunning what can happen. Patience is not one of my natural virtues. I have to work at it. So I can get frustrated. And I just remember that phrase, that it's easy to overestimate what you can do in 1 year and underestimate what can happen in 10 years. And so it's that, you know, what Eugene Peterson called a long obedience in the same direction, that you can see that God-sized dreams can happen. And, you know, you need to spend some time on the gain and look how far you've come from where you started. And then that leads you to a posture of gratitude. Part of our soul framework at Belmont that we talk about in developing character, the O in the soul framework is to offer gratitude with joy. And I've learned that I sleep a lot better when I spend time in the evening on a gratitude journal and just cataloging things to be grateful for, not just the things that I need to prepare for or I'm frustrated about or any of those things.
One of my next questions was, what connects you to God? What brings you joy in your faith? It sounds like that's one element, is that gratitude journal, that practice.
It's a way of just being mindful and intentional. And music does it. My mother was a choir director, so like your wife. And unfortunately, the music gene did not get passed to me. I'm not a singer or a musician, but I love music. And I know that St. Augustine said, anyone who sings prays twice. And so part of what connects me to God is music and the arts, because it gives you that way of touching the non-cognitive parts of our soul. And sometimes I can overthink things, and what I really need is to listen to music. Sometimes it's to give voice to what I'm feeling, but other times when I'm discouraged, I'll listen to the Hallelujah Chorus, because it just has a way of calling me out of myself. And it really connects me to God. I would say the other thing that does is being in the presence of children. Jesus said that except as you become like a little child. And I find with our granddaughters or other children, there's a joy and an exuberance in their life that sometimes just makes me say, all right, get out of yourself. This is fun. Just don't take yourself so seriously. And I really believe that's powerful to experience.
As you think back, this changes, at least for me, it's changed many times in my life. Is there some chapter or teaching of Jesus that has been or is a guiding star for you?
Perhaps my favorite passage of scripture is Ephesians 3, the prayer that closes chapter 3, where the prayer is that we might comprehend with all the saints. And I think when you say all the saints, there are some pretty crazy ones in the history of our faith. And so that's itself complicated. But it says that you might comprehend the height and the depth and the length and the breadth of Christ. And then the prayer closes by saying, now to the one who working within us is able to accomplish abundantly far more than all we could ask or imagine. To him be honor and glory in the church and forever. And I just think that's a prayer to be curious and to live into awe and wonder and a sense of joy and that overflowing grace and love of God. And so I think about that. The connecting to the Gospels would be something like the loaves and fishes, where there's a multiplier impact. And we live in a time where it's easy to think it's a zero-sum game at best, if not ending up in the negative. And I think we need that spirit of hope and joy that's rooted in abundance that Jesus embodies and that you see in Ephesians 3.
I would like to ask, you're doing something really remarkable when it became not strictly a Baptist university. Because sometimes the biggest butting of heads can happen between Christian brothers and sisters, or this happens as well between different divisions or sects of Islam, or sometimes it's almost the brother sitting next to you is more irritating to you than the neighbor across the street, that kind of thing. So in a time where it is turbulent and people tend to jump to black and white, we're right, you're wrong, and because you're wrong, I'm cutting you off, I think you're doing something really necessary at Belmont, which is inviting people from differing traditions. Do you see that spilling out beyond the university as your students go out?
I sure hope so. And I really believe that learning to appreciate and learn from each other, we've emphasized unlikely friendships, which can be people from different faith traditions. It can also be people from different geographic backgrounds or different political perspectives, to see the other as a gift. And part of that's both giving and receiving what we call unreasonable hospitality, taking from the title of a wonderful book by Will Guidara. But it's to say that to see the other as a gift that we can learn from and grow from. We're hosting right now a Holocaust exhibit that was called Some Were Neighbors, and it was how some neighbors turned Jews over to the Nazis and others sheltered Jews. And when we had the opening of the exhibit, a 96-year-old Holocaust survivor came to speak. And it was so compelling as he talked about the people who risked themselves to save his life and his gratitude. And he could recall very clear details. And students were moved to think, that could be me, that we have choices to make. We can be bridge builders or we can be bridge burners. And we're in a time especially where it's important to see that opportunity as a gift. John Whitfield, who joined us this summer, who's done a lot of work in Christian worship, says what we need in worship is that rich diversity. He says when he was running the Calvin Institute for Christian Worship, he said, we promised everybody who attended that there'd be something they would hate in worship. Now, the flip side was also to say there'll be something that you find welcoming. But we need to be appreciative. And Gregory the Great said this centuries ago when he said, we need to be able to get beyond ourselves. If you're an introvert, go find an extrovert and become friends. If you're an extrovert, be sure you take time in a closet to pray. And we need those unlikely friendships. And when we can cultivate that and really genuinely listen and learn, that's when we're most likely to grow. If you believe that God is active in the world, if you believe God raised Jesus from the dead, if you believe that the Holy Spirit is active in the world, there are lots of things you can look for that will seem miraculous. And we just need eyes to see that. And we've, in our culture, been too much on our heels and lacking in imagination and building the kinds of bridges that can enable ourselves and our neighbors to flourish.
Many thanks to Greg Jones for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Heidi Clough, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designers are James Call, DJ Cromarty, and Gabriel Haro. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. You can check out more of our episodes and extended interviews on our YouTube channel. Connect with us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith. If you're like me, you want to stay informed, even about some of the tough topics that have to be discussed, but so much of the discussion just really doesn't move anything forward or generate light as much as heat. That's where Top of Mind comes in, a BYU original podcast. They understand how polarizing those kind of conversations can be, and they want to help us engage in that challenge while actually learning something. Their goal is developing empathy for others. Top of Mind can help you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and even challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.